हरिः
ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 70. Okay. Srila Prabhupada's comment on this verse answers all the doubts presented here in Vedanta Sutra. The friends of the twice-born families are those who are born in the families of Brahmana, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, or the spiritually cultured families, but who themselves are not equal to their forefathers. Such descendants are not recognized as such for want of purificatory achievements. The purificatory activities begin even before the birth of the child, and the seed-giving reformatory process is called Garbhadhana Samskar. One who has not undergone such Garbhadhana Samskar, or spiritual family planning, is not accepted as being an actual twice-born family. The Garbhadhana Samskar is followed by other purificatory processes, out of which the sacred thread ceremony is one. This is performed at the time of spiritual initiation. After this particular samskar, one is rightly called twice born. One birth is calculated during the seed-giving samskar, and the second is calculated at the time of spiritual initiation. One who has been able to undergo such important samskars can be called a bona fide twice born. Right? So this is the samskars are done by the parents, so that means that gives them mentality. Like this. So then we see, and then from the activities they perform, in other words, these are the activities that the parents performed, then there's the activities that the child performs. And so when that combination is there, then you would say, now this is a bona fide twice born. Because they have gone through these purificatory rites and they act in that way. Right? So, but the ultimate point is them acting in that way. So that's why the samskars are there. The samskars are there to create the best opportunity for the living entity to actually take seriously the spiritual values. Because we see is that one is attracting a soul who's interested in the spiritual, pious and interested in the spiritual. The second is actually then about the spiritual. Everything in between is then the various aspects so that they may be able to take advantage of the spiritual. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj, the Dvijabandhus, they lack samskaras. And even the Shudras, even, they do not want samskaras. So can you say that Dvijabandhus and Shudras, the Dvijabandhus are on the level of Shudras?
Yeah, that's why it was said. What was that? From the Mahabharata, from the Bhagavatam verse reference. Women, laborers, and friends of the twice born. Mm-hmm. Right? So here then laborers and friends of the twice born, they're put on the equal level. Right? Women, it's not that women are specifically just Shudras, but the tendency for lamentation is there and actually enjoying the lamentation. That's why then that aspect is there. Because we see there that was mentioned before with, what's his name? In grief, Shuk, he went to Dravati, to Rainaka. Right. So then they're in they happen to, how you say, be in that lamenting position, and generally when you lament, if it's really bad, you stay alone, but otherwise you want to share it with others. So you go to others. So that's the, you know, you're lamenting and going to others. does that make sense? So that's why then the women are put in this category. But the point is so some will say women don't have a varna, but they do. Because then they match. Brahmin woman goes to Brahmin man, Kshatriya, Kshatriya, Vaishya, like this. But in general, within the category, then they will tend to deal in this way. You know, just like Shudras lament, But a Shudra woman will limit more than that, in a sense. So Brahman, you know, the Brahman may not, but the woman will. But now, the lamentation of the Brahman woman may be less than the Shudra man. But the point is the mentality is still there. So that's why then women are, they have the aspect of the Varna and Ashram, but at the same time they also have their own category. Right? So in other words, if you're dealing with Varna and Ashram, then they have to have the feminine consideration.
Garbhadhan, it purifies the consciousness of the parents, but does it purify the consciousness of the conceived child also?
Yeah, that's point is that what Garbhadhan is for is you're purifying, means you're purifying the conscious, but you're also purifying the womb. So then if the place is pure, then, you know, nicer souls like to come there. If we have this nice, clean place, then nice people like to come. If it's all dirty and all, then no, who likes to come? So that's the idea. It's that purification all around. So you're purifying the conscience and you're purifying the situation. That way then you'll get a soul that matches that consciousness and that pure situation. So that's the idea. That's why it's said then, if that's not done, then it has that impure state, that's going to give naturally rise to lamentation. Right? Because anytime, if it's impure, means there's material desire always means misery. Right? So then that's why then it's said, Shudra then is always in that miserable condition, because there's always material desire. Does that make sense? Well, for the Dvijas, it's not that there's not material desire, but there's also an understanding of Shastra and how actually there's higher principles. So you have both, there is the progressive aspect in the material. Well, in the Shudra, it's not, they themselves, it's not actually progressive, but because they work with those who are of a higher position, and by that association, then they start to take on these little higher qualities. So if they do that endeavor nicely, then that moves them to the next position. Right? Then it will become conscious. Right? So in other words, a Shudra is following whatever the Brahma Kshatriya Vaishya and that relationship and that kind of, you know, attachment and all that, that will move them to that next position. But it's not so much that they're conscious of the higher position. They're just connected to the person. Then coming to that position, now they will be conscious of the process. Does that make sense? So that's why it works very nice. If they can be conscious themselves, great. But if not, just that attachment will. You know what I'm saying? But while that the others, that attachment, that will bring them to a lower. I mean, unless, you know, unless it's connected to that, it'll bring them up to the mundane.
Dvijabandhus, they lack the gunas, but they have the karma. Or
not necessarily. Dvijabandhus, the point of Dvijabandhu is that there's something not correct in the whole thing. Either they don't follow the activities, they don't follow the sadhana, they're not interested in these things, they're impure in their habits. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they can do. They might be able to do the samskaras and everything. You know, that what we're talking about there wouldn't necessarily be Dvijabandhu. That would make the difference between, let's say, Brahmana and Vaishnava. Does that make sense? Yes. Or the levels of Brahma. Is he, you know, into karma? Is he into jnana? You know, so you can have someone who knows all the brahminical activities, performs them, but doesn't understand their connection to the Lord. Generally, Dvijabandhu means they're born into these proper families, but they themselves aren't really interested in carrying on that kind of lifestyle or tradition. So, yes.
Can we say that among all the samskaras, that initiation is the most important?
Yes, you could say. But then we see here, Prabhupada points these two out, is that if the Garbhadhan is proper, then then there's more chance that the initiation will come along. But for those who haven't gotten the samskaras, then of that, if you get the initiation samskar, then one doesn't have to really worry about the others. Because that's the whole point of all of them. All the samskaras to bring you to that point. Because that's why upanaya, to bring one near. All the other ones, marriage then creates the favorable condition. Then Garbhadhan, then all these other, right, that will then create an environment where it's more likely that someone will be interested in the spiritual connection. So yes, the spiritual is the most important. But you could say to create the environment in which there's more of a tendency to be take advantage of that spiritual environment, then that's why Garbhodan. Because if you'll do Garbhodan, why won't you do the others like that? So that's why if you focus on those two, then you'll get everything in between. Like that. Is that, yeah. Yes.
Can you elaborate on this lamentation? Does it mean like complaining for complaining's sake, playing the victim, fault finding? And what's the contrast? How does one of the higher orders deal with such issues? They try to do something proactive about it rather than complain.
I'd say to all of that, yes. That's because the point is that, see, for the Shudra, the taste of lamentation is actually something that's valued. You know, like we gave the example yesterday. So you have, you know, the Bohemians and all that kind of thing, and then that aspect of, you know, how you say. You have people, they like each other, this, that, but they get together, you can't guarantee that it's going to work out, mm-hmm. right? Means you end with, okay, the two are together, you know, and the music goes up, and then there's that full, both of them singing together, and it goes up, and then they bring it down, and then everyone, the curtain goes, everyone claps. Okay, it's great, but at the same time, it makes you feel good, but at the same time, that'll be more temporary. Mm-hmm. But now, if they're all there, and they've gone out, and the girl's sick and dying, they go out to pawn some stuff, and they come back, and they come back, and then she's died, mm-hmm. you know, like that, and then the lamentation there, then when it ends, mm-hmm. that same flavor continues with you. Hence, you see those in the art world generally prefer bad endings. They'll say it's more realistic. It's not any more realistic, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, he's flying in his dream. That's more realistic than if he was walking. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, what are you talking about? You know, it's all like that. But it's preferred because it has that aspect of lamentation. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why it's called art house. It's mm-hmm. not called Dwija house. You know. You know, or, you know, it's because it's their value in the material. So the position of lamentation is appreciated because then you can gossip about it, you can sit around and talk about it. It's a strong emotion.
You feel better about yourself.
Yeah, yeah, like that. And, you know, it's immediately something you can get on board with. Mm-hmm. So and when you're lamenting, you're the center of attention, but others can take part in that lamentation, you know, that vicarious kind of, mm-hmm. you know, like this. So it works out for everybody, as long as everyone in that group is willing to let someone else be the lamentor, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and then they can assist. So it's just part of the Shudra culture, the mentality to lament about everything, mm-hmm. you know, and that's your position, you know, how tough life's been and how this and that, and, you know, my life's tougher than your life, that makes me better than you,
yeah.
you know, like that. And, so that's the whole. That's why it's called Shudra, because mm-hmm. of that. Mm-hmm. You know, the Dwijas, it's not that. Because if you're dealing with the material, you're always going to be miserable. Mm-hmm. But there's the concept of that Shastra says there's progressive things to do. So you're making that endeavor and doing that, whether you're lamenting or not, is another thing. But you're making that progress. Mm-hmm. So lamentation is something that happens in the process, mm-hmm. but for the Shudra, basically, it is the process. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. so that's the whole thing.
Okay.
You know. Mm-hmm. Does that make mm-hmm. sense? Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was thinking that apart from being the center of attention, the position of the victim gives you the right to criticize others because you know this is. I'm not at fault, somebody.
Yeah.
Goes like that.
Yeah. Then it also makes it that that point you made, you're not at fault. It's everyone else's fault. I'm just a victim of the circumstances and all that. So therefore, I'm okay. I'm good. Mm-hmm. So they elevate themselves by this negative mm-hmm. aspect. Mm-hmm. But it's still within the Varna Ashram system, which is based on positive, because we're going by the Varna aspect. Mm-hmm. That in Varna, that they're going to assist without any bad feelings, those of the Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya. Mm-hmm. So that way they'll be engaged in good work that's actually beneficial for the society. Mm-hmm. So in that ability to be able to work is without complaining, that's the positive aspect.
Yes.
So then when you have antijas, it's based on negative, then the shudra within that, it's really negative. So mm-hmm. then that becomes really a problem.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So, and it's not progressive. Basically, they're born grihasthas, they remain grihasthas, whether they're together with somebody or not, but they're grihastha mentality always, from mm-hmm. birth to death. Mm-hmm. So it's not progressive on that side. But the progressive is the other side, mm-hmm. is that working for someone of a higher position, then you may, catch some of those moods, some of those things, and then progress. Mm-hmm. And also by that, you may, considerations within ashram may take it up. Mm-hmm. So the whole point is one's still able to move forward. So if something's not right, doesn't really have an effect, because that's just the position. So if you do anything proper, that's considered a plus. Mm-hmm. While the others that one can say is, oh, but this all looks bad, but that's the point, is that negatives are just normal. Pluses are noticed. Mm-hmm. While for the dvijas and pluses are standard, mm-hmm. negative will be noticed. Mm-hmm. Right. So it all balances. So,
can we say that Kali Yuga is full of shudras, because of which all the newspapers, everything, they discuss it just about the negative.
Yeah, you could say, like that.
All they discuss is about lamentation.
Basically, means that's why it's said in everyone's born shudra. Yes. But the position that it goes even more, I would say that's because of the antija. That's still within the shudra. Yes. Because then the shudra is, the higher ideals in the antija culture. Mm-hmm. Therefore, after, 150 years, people are, like we said, still appreciating Lava Wem. Right? But,
actually, even when we are analyzing all these things, it is more becoming important how Varnashrama and the natures of all these people is very important.
It's very important. It's just a matter of people don't want to. See, it's like this. If I accept Varnashram, what does that mean? It means it's progressive. That means what has to happen. I have to give up my lamenting position. I like my lamenting position. So why should I take up Varnashram? Then for others is that, but what will be my position? Because I'm so proud that unless I'm the total, absolute top of the pile, then I don't want to know. You know what I'm saying? So people worried about their social status, they don't want Varnashram because it might not come out the way they want it. And from the ashram side, people don't want it to be progressive, because then how will they lament? So we see is it's all passion and ignorance clouds one, that one can't appreciate Varnashram, because its basis is goodness. It accommodates those in passion and ignorance, but its function is goodness. And its purpose is pure goodness. So this idea, it's mundane. But if goodness for the purpose of pure goodness is mundane, how mundane is passion and ignorance? You know what I'm saying? So that's the... Yeah.
Can you please clarify that the spiritual initiation earlier, it means the first or the second initiation?
First and second are one initiation, just in two parts.
That's in Gaudiya Math that they have.
No, it's
in ISKCON, they give the second initiation after a huge gap. So
they do also. Okay. vice, right? Then sambar. Then rasa. Okay? Samdu, rice, rasam, sambar. Right? Now, is that a meal or not?
It is.
So, what does it matter, the detail inside?
No, it doesn't matter.
Yes. The point is that point of connecting yourself with the spiritual master and committing yourself to that relationship based on instruction. That's what we're talking about here. Because if we want to get really Vedic, then all these things wouldn't even apply to us. You know what I'm saying? Because unless you have all these things, then you wouldn't have the thing, then you would be taking up and getting Upanayanam on its own from the Vedic point of view. We're getting it connected with the Pancharatra. So in other words, by the chanting process, we develop the qualities required by Pancharatra, in which then we qualify for the assisting position of the Vedic. But the Vedic initiation wouldn't be gained by anyone unless you were basically born in these families. So that means out of the society of devotees, you could probably say 99% would be unqualified for if we're talking about Vedic approach of Upanayanam.
So
you know what I'm saying? How many devotees are from practicing smarta families? You know, or practicing sampradayic Brahmin families. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. That's why, you know, I'm being quite generous at saying 99. I'm not putting any, you know, point, you know, after, you know, what would be the standard, you know. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Therefore, take the principle that's at work here. And so it doesn't matter then whether someone got first and second together, got first and second, they got first and then after an eon and they got second, you know, like that. That doesn't matter, you know. Whether they call it as two initiations, whether they call it as one, whether they say one is, you know, nama, whether it's this and that, that doesn't matter. It's one entity. You know what I'm saying? Like in north they'll say dal, in south they'll say sambar. But technically speaking, because at the end of cooking, you put together spices and ghee and poured it on top of the preparation, that itself, that process is called sambar. Right? If I do that in the beginning, that's called a chance. If I do it at the end, that's called sambar. So, therefore, you take the dal, and at the end you put the sambar on top of it. Now, if you just call it sambar, hey, you know what I'm saying? But north will call it dal because it's made with dal. But it's not that in south it's not made with dal. Or it's not that in north they don't use a sambar at the end. You know what I'm saying? And if you go, you know, cross beyond Istanbul, then they call it soup. You know what I'm saying? So, that's the... You know... Yes. Okay. So, therefore, the important point is that if one is coming from the background where one is having this position and having the mentality, that's then called dvija. You're not, that's not dvija. That's dvija bandhu or just shudra. Right. So here then what they're addressing is that he not knowing about transcendence, but being from a dvija family, technically a dvija, someone from a dvija family should know Brahman. He doesn't know. Therefore, when he runs into a material situation, he laments. Right? But because he's a dvija, he approaches someone of a higher position to therefore remove that lamentation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense? Because the point is, when you're really lamenting, Do you approach someone to necessarily get rid of your lamentation, or you approach someone who will commiserate in your lamentation? You understand? So that's the difference. So approaching to remove the lamentation, that is then the position of a dvija. But before that, you could count him as a dvija bandhu, so that's why using the term shudra is not an improper thing. But because it's coming from the dvija position, he used the shudra in the proper sense that he was lamenting. He approached someone who could remove that lamentation. Like that. So there's all these subtle points that are there, but the theme is that because spiritual life is the main point, that's what has to be done. That's what identifies one as the dvija. So when the devotees then approach the spiritual master, take up spiritual life, it doesn't matter what technically their varna is. They're Brahmins. They're dvijas. Because they've approached for a solution to material lamentation. So that's why all Vaishnavas are counted as Brahmins. But it's not necessarily that occupationally they're Brahmins. But by the mentality, which is actually the more essential point, they are Brahmins. Because the varna, that's the social standing. Or the ashram, that's the spiritual standing. So you can say spiritually they're Brahmins. But socially, not necessarily.
Taking the children mentality is very narrow-minded, and they live in their own world, like through the lamentation and stuff. But at the same time, when Arjuna was lamenting, and Krishna was saying, don't lament, it seems like Arjuna was worried about the entire Vedic civilization being destroyed. But then Krishna pointed out that it's very nicely presented, but in actuality, because he was lamenting due to his own viewpoint of the world, he wasn't thinking about the Lord, therefore it was still narrow-minded.
Yes. Yes, just a broader narrow-mindedness. My narrow-mindedness is wider than your narrow-mindedness. So.
Yeah.
That's why then whatever the position, if you include the Lord, then everybody is in that position. Devotionally, that's all there. So, means devotionally, whatever aspect is available in devotion, that everybody can do. You know, so the benefits. But the particular activity, that takes the particular guna and karma that is there. Because the body doesn't change. You know what I'm saying? It's not that you're sitting there and then Guru Maharaj, you know, called you up and then said, okay, what are the four regulated principles? You said them. And then, you know, asks a few other questions and this and that. And then he hands you your beads, say, this is your name. And that, and then you're so happy, you offer obeisances, and then when you get up, then you were the Hulk or something, you know, like that. So then now it's like then you do all that kind of stuff, and then it's cool, right? You know? And then you'll go take care of the monkey problem for Guru Maharaj because he's annoyed by monkeys. So for the Hulk, that's the easy thing: go up to the tree, shake all the monkeys out. You know, it's good. No, the physio-psychological nature remains exactly the same. What changes is the consciousness. So if there is any, covering within the covering, by bad association, by lack of, samskar, purificatory achievements, then one is of a higher varna, but one by ignorance just acting as a shudra, then it may come up to a particular position. But whatever that position is, that's where it'll go, that's where it'll stop. But the consciousness then can go all the way from wherever it is, stuck in the mud somewhere, up to prema. Does that make sense? Because it doesn't need to change. If it did, why is it in the spiritual world everyone's not the same? Right? Does that make sense? It means Mother Jashoda is Mother Jashoda. It's not that, one day she's that, the next day she's something else. You know what I'm saying? But that accommodates that variety, that different, that depth of rasa. If you're not accommodating such depth and variety of rasa, then you get Vaikuntha, where basically everybody does look the same. They all look like Vishnu. You can't really tell the difference. But even there, they have some, you know, far-out-looking personalities. You know, Hanuman's there, and other Kanaras, and like this. So then you do get wild stuff. Does that make sense? But then it's really obvious they're different. So the whole point is that there's no need to change. Mother Jashoda doesn't have to change her position. Oh, but she's, you know, just there. Why can't she be the king of Vrindavan? Wouldn't that be more social? You know, why isn't there equal spiritual opportunity here? Why can't she actually manage Vrindavan and let Nanda Baba worry about lunch? You know, let's you know, make things equal here. You know, these are all mundane concepts. All it is I have a thing I want to do. I'm not supposed to do it, so I'll just use anything, the philosophy, religion, you know, clever thinking, emotions, whatever it takes to get done what I want to get done. So it's not about Krishna. We'll say, oh, it's equal spiritual opportunity, but it's not actually. Because devotion is what's the point. Doing the activity, that's not spiritual. You're engaging it, but it's not spiritual itself. Does that make sense? Okay, Sutra 1.3.35.
It continues.
Oh, fabulous. Okay, because I was thinking this only dealt with a particular aspect of the thing, but it says all doubts. So now my doubts about the all doubts have been cleared because it goes on to the next page.
And there is a story in Chaitanya Charitamrita that one king sends one brahmanas, high class brahmanas, to Narottam Das Thakur because to check. But before meeting Narottam Das Thakur, there is his disciples are there selling in the market,
yeah,
and they argue with him. And then they say, the brahmanas understand, his disciples who are just the sellers in the market, they are so qualified. So what will be their guru then?
Yeah. It's always nice, these tricks.
It is like, means once one get initiated, he may be doing Shudra activities, services only by Varma, but with higher qualities.
Yes. So then, yeah, that's the whole. Because it's consciousness. The other is just what work is done. Right? It means they're selling in the market, somebody's managing the market. The guy managing the market says what goes on in the market. You know, it's not that they say what goes on in the market. You know, and then there's the king above that, where the market can be, what the things are, what are the prices. Then there's the Brahmin, what should be sold and not sold. You know what I'm saying? So you have a hierarchy like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Very good. Thank you. If the father and mother do not undertake the process of spiritual family planning and simply beget children out of passion only, the children are called dvijabandhus. These dvijabandhus are certainly not as intelligent as the children of regular twice-born families, right? Because the passion means it's not that we're not saying that they'll have a low IQ, you know, we're not saying that they'll be, you know, like Cajun or something, you know, like this. You know, what we're saying here is that their ability to use it for higher purposes, that's what gets in the way. Right? Because you can say, no, but there's so many really intelligent people, but what are they using their intelligence for? For passion. That's all. So that's the whole point. Someone born of passion thinks in passion. Right? So that's the whole point. So even if they have, the parents are very intelligent, so in that way they have the same IQ, but the point is, what are they going to use that IQ for? They're going to use it for Shudra stuff. Does that make sense? Because Shudra is not like, on this, when we're talking about the culture, it's not Dwija is the standard, Shudra is below. Shudra is the general, Dwija is above. That's how it works. Because Shudra is human. So in other words, human life is there. But then within that, those who can see, you know, things according to Shastra, then that's a higher position. And now of seeing according to Shastra, then seeing according to the economic development, seeing according to the administrative development, or seeing according to the educational development, that has a hierarchy. But otherwise, Shudras are standard. Then Dvijas are above that. Does that make sense? We tend to say whatever is this, everything else is below. You know, it's like you have Dvijas and then you look into this, you know, this abyss, and then somewhere down there that you can't even see are the Shudras. But actually, it's not like that. Does that make sense? In the abyss, that's where the Antijas are. They're down there. You know, the Shudras, what are you looking at? Does that make sense? Yeah. The Dvija Bandhus are classified with the Shudras and the women class, who are by nature less intelligent, right? So here, less intelligent means laments about something, right? There's something you could do, but instead of doing that, you lament. Something's gone wrong, so you lament about it rather than looking at, okay, what to do. That's what it was meant by less intelligent. Yes.
Can you do both?
Then it's just a matter of taste.
Then hence you're really a woman.
Yeah, no, but again, it just means that, that when you do both, means the aspect of the lamentation, that's the woman part. And then where you're doing something practical, that would be according to the Varna part. You know? You know, so in other words, you lament, everybody else should be doing something, you know. You know, like that, you're sitting there at home lamenting, and the husband comes in and this and that. What are you doing here? Get out there, and you know, things like that. So that's how you see the ball. Yeah. Like that. You know, so it's selective lamentation. Yeah. You know, Shudras is just generic, but women, it's selective. Yes.
Because, Maharaj, everybody laments. Like, everybody.
Yes. But that's because we're in the material world. But it's just a matter of how controllable is it.
Okay.
You know? Does that make sense? That's what we're talking about.
Okay. So it's not that you don't at all.
No, no. It just possible. Means is that if it comes up, then how do you deal with it?
Yeah.
Instead of getting into it,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, getting out your track pants and your baggy t-shirt, you know, and just, you know, jumping onto the, you know, unmade bed. You know, then, you know, that's it's different. Then you figure out, okay, what to do.
Yeah.
Like that. It's not that things don't come up, but what do you do with it? That's the point. So we're not saying, it's just like that's what we mean in devotional service, is that it's not that by taking up devotional service that no problems come up, but it's just that in those problems coming up, what do you do with them? So you'll be unaffected in that, you'll be absorbed in Krishna, therefore the unfortunate situation doesn't disturb you. It's not that disturbing situations aren't there. You know, it's just like we see sometimes when we're really happy, then disturbing situations come up, but it doesn't bother us. You know? What was the guy singing in the rain? Yeah, so normally that would be a disturbing situation. But he's happy. So he's just singing in the rain. He's not
crying.
Know. Yeah, and then you have the old lamppost that actually had, you know, like a, what do you call it? The bottom part where you could actually stand on, and, you know, and they were round, so, you know, they weren't too big or square or weird, you know, so then, you know, you could do something. No? Yeah. All important details. You know, you wouldn't be able to do that with modern light poles. No. Yeah, so it's like, you know, you get your feet would get stuck on the all the bolts on the bottom. So, yeah. So that may be the real problem, that people aren't as happy as they used to be. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that it doesn't bother you. So like that, in Krishna conscious, because you're absorbed in Krishna, these things don't bother you. It's not that they're not there, it's not that you don't deal with them, but it just doesn't bother you to have to deal with them. While with your lamenting, then you're already disturbed. Something comes up, you lament more. Oh no, you know, there's a saying, when it rains, it pours. You know, also a rain, you know, I say example. Like that. But in the other one, the more it rains, the happier you are, you know. So it just doesn't bother you. Does that make sense?
Vaishnavas, for them, the fire of lamentation can burn up the offenses they committed something wrong.
But that's lamentation in connection to not being Krishna conscious.
Yeah.
That's not lamentation that your pet hamster died.
I heard that if you're lamenting correctly, then not too much so that you become paralyzed, but just enough so that it would actually be beneficial.
That means you're lamenting about the aspect of not being Krishna conscious, but from the position of Krishna consciousness. You understand? The lamentation that's not useful is that you drop from Krishna consciousness and you think, I'm the doer, therefore I've done all this wrong, so therefore I'm so bad. Right? Somebody said. Yeah.
Can you not take lamentation positively in Krishna consciousness, in the sense
that... that's what we were discussing.
If I lamented.
But lament, but how are you lamenting? It's just like cooking, isn't it a positive thing? We're cooking something for Krishna. You know? So, I put the frying pan on, I put potatoes so there's so many I can't stir them, drop in a full bowl of salt, like that, but you know, we're trying to, you know... So, isn't there a process? So the point is lamenting about what? Lamenting about that, how you say, I've wasted my time when I could have been Krishna conscious by not being Krishna conscious. So I'm doing that from what? The Krishna conscious perspective. But if I'm lamenting, I did this, I did that, and that's so, then you're living in the past. How will that benefit anybody? I mean, that's just standard lamentation. Everybody does that. So in other words, you have to lament from the present, not from the past.
For the future.
Huh? No, because that's lamenting in the mode of passion. What benefits I'll get from my lamentation.
Because devotees, they usually lament, and even we're not chanting, attentively, and there's so much of challenges in chanting.
And then what? And then from that lamentation, what should be the result? Yeah, if you try, but if by the lamentation, I'm so useless, I can't chant, so you give up the chanting, so then what's the point? Because I'm supposed to be the fabulous, just chanting my rounds, people are standing around, and you have that... quiet sound of the crowd cheering and everything's going slow motion, the confetti and the different angles and things like that, and it's all going on as I'm chanting my japa, the demigods are showering flowers and, the whole thing's happening like that. So no, it's just I'm chanting. It's not about what benefit I'll get from it. So I'm doing this to do that. So because it's not on that level, therefore I'm useless, I'm disgusting. Because generally the person who lacks self-confidence is because there's more false ego that I should be fabulous, and because I'm not fabulous like I want, therefore they lament. Because the guy that's kind of down to earth about who he is, that I'm not such a business, then he doesn't have much of a problem. Because what's the lament about? He doesn't expect anything. I'm a doofus, I can't do anything anyway, so... If nothing happens, hey, that's standard. And if I did something, ooh, hey, what's going on? So, he's positive, But the guy who thinks I'm supposed to be fabulous, and then, I gave the class, or I dressed the deities, and afterwards, oh, what do you think? And if they go, wow, this is fabulous, that was the greatest, that was like that, then you feel, yeah, okay. But if they go, how do you think where the deities? Yeah, no, it's good, but I feel the crown, you could have done this, and I would have put the dhoti like that, and then you're like, you're freaking out, and nobody appreciates, and that I work so hard. So, you know what I'm saying? So, in other words, lamentation with false ego is not important. Lamentation using the intelligence, then that has some value. You know what I'm saying? But you have to apply it to the present. What I can do, I should. I now have started to appreciate Krishna consciousness. How stupid I was for not doing that in the past. That's what's going to purify you.
Yeah. We can follow in the footsteps of Janushirtith because he approached Ravinkar.
Yes, no, that's the thing as we approach. That's the, so more emphasis on dra than shu.
Drashu.
Soft shu. Yes.
I think that we have a very good example of Shri Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Narottam Das Thakur in their songs.
Mm.
There's that part that usually starts with lamentation.
Right.
But then the positive side is there as well. So
yes.
It's balanced.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, it's the right kind of lamentation.
Yes, yes.
So it is very prominent actually in the Gaudiya tradition.
Yes.
But it's balanced.
Yes. Yes, because you have the Sambhog and Vipalamba.
Yes.
So you always have the balance. Yes, so that's a very good example. So after a few years, we'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. Yeah. Does that make sense? So if it's unclear how the lamentation works, look at the songs of the Acharyas. Because like that, especially the earlier songs or the earlier groups of songs, they'll start out with that.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'll take it through that I've wasted my life and this and that. You know, but they're not saying I'm useless. They're saying I wasted my life. The lamentation is not about I'm useless. The lamentation is I wasted my life. Because I'm the servant of Krishna. So being servant, I've wasted my life. Then, you know, all the things that show the waste of life and then bringing up how to engage those and then, you know, the proper mentality. But you see it always ends in that humility. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, the Dvija Pandas are classified with the Shudras in the women class, who are by nature less intelligent. The Shudras in women class do not have to undergo any samskaras save and accept the ceremony of marriage. Right? Because within that, then everything is taken care of. Right? So Garbhadhan's done, and then one does up to that, but then after that, if other things aren't done, then it works. But if it's done, then it's fine. Because naturally dvijas would do, but the main thing is it goes. So the marriage ceremony then for the woman is the main purificatory rite. Because that purifies of all varieties of things. Basically, most of the rituals in the Vedic ceremony is purification of the girl. Like that. It's not this basically none there for the boy, because that's already been done in the other samskars. Yes.
Prabhupada did initiate women as
yes.
well as Bhaktisiddhanta.
But that's a spiritual thing.
Okay.
We're talking about the material. Like that, like, you know, the hair cutting ceremony or this or that. It's not necessarily important that the girls do it. And if you do it, it's nice, but it's not necessarily important. You know, or the specific is all the ones can be done for the girls except Upanayanam. Because marriage is their Upanayanam rite. Because the marriage is not for the purification of the boy, so it's not. But the boy's there at the marriage. No, he's just there at the marriage because he's married.
He's invited.
Because he's marrying the girl, therefore he's there. You know, it's just like it's the birthday party of the person, and friends come, but it's not about the friends. You know, so that's the marriage is about the girl, and then the boy's there because he's connected to the girl. But the Upanayanam, then that's about the boy. So in the Vedic things, Manu mentions that all the samskars can be done for the girl, but they won't do Upanayanam. Because all those different things are done in the marriage rite, because the mantras are about the girl, they're not about the boy. So therefore, they get the same benefit, but in ways that are in line with their nature. Because otherwise, when you're small, then, you know, sometimes you can't even tell the difference between a boy and a girl, right? You know, the first year, is it a boy, is it a girl? Depends how you cut the hair and dress them, you can't really tell, you know? So that's when all these samskars are done. Then there's a gap until, you know, Upanayana. Does that make sense? And Vidyarambha doesn't, that's a simple thing, so that's, does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why then it's done like that. So therefore, you see Shudras also, that the only samskar they do is marriage. The less intelligent class of men, namely women, Shudras, and unqualified sons of the higher castes, are devoid of necessary qualifications to understand the purpose of the transcendental Vedas. From them, the Mahabharata was prepared. The purpose of the Mahabharata is to administer the purpose of the Vedas, and therefore within this Mahabharata, the summary Veda of Bhagavad Gita is placed. Less intelligent are more interested in stories than in philosophy, And therefore, the philosophy of the Vedas in the form of the Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Lord Sri Krishna. Right? So even as a philosophical treatise, it's still in a story form. That's the whole idea. So therefore, it'll have that attractiveness. Vyasadeva and Lord Krishna are both on the transcendental plane, and therefore they collaborated in doing good to the fallen souls of this age. The Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all the Vedic knowledge. It is the first book of spiritual values, as the Upanishads are. The Vedanta philosophy is the subject matter for study by the spiritual graduates. Only the postgraduate spiritual student can enter into the spiritual and devotional service of the Lord. It is a great science, and the great professor is the Lord himself in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And persons who are empowered by him can initiate others in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.4.25 purport. Wow, so very early in the... this is fourth... That's when Vyasadeva is... I think he meets Narad Muni. Yeah. So the whole point is the spiritual values because of the nature of the soul. But you also have to deal with what particular conditioning is there. Right? So we can't have... It would be illogical to demand that we're addressing the individual natures of people. But when the Vedas do that, then that's being discriminated. Right? So either we discriminate the different natures and therefore who can do what, or we don't. Not that we pick and choose on the material platform we discriminate, but on the spiritual we don't, or vice versa. Does that make sense? We have to be very, very careful, because you'll generally see is that in non-Vedic philosophies or non-Vedic issues, you know, then they'll always do that. They'll do one or the other, just like he mentions. Okay, the person is lamenting. He feels the victim. Why? Because someone criticized him. But now, as the victim, he has the right to criticize. So what's the difference between him and the person who criticized him? Exactly the same. All it was is, I'm feeling bad because I wasn't the one doing the criticizing. But now that I'm the victim, now I can criticize, now I feel a little better. So the method is exactly the same. So it's inconsistent. If criticizing's bad, then criticizing's bad. Does that make sense? So we have to be very, very careful there. We can't say as, oh no, anybody can do this. Okay, so then we'll deal like that. No, but you don't deal with women properly. No, you can't do that. See, either there's no specific method for dealing with women, or there is. It's not that you can pull it out whenever one likes. You understand? That's the meaning of less intelligent. Because it's not discerned what's going on. Does that make sense? So you see is that that's what will happen. When you mentioned about lamentation, the Shudras, then the whole point is that they, because they're the victim, they have the right to, you know, be upset. You know, it's kind of like given as their right. Does that make sense? You know, so that's then being addressed here. So therefore then, considering this, then the Bhagavad Gita is there, in which it addresses that Shudra nature. Now in Kali Yuga, then as everyone being born Shudra, then it's a perfect way to approach spiritual life. So then it gives the essence of the Veda in that story form within a greater story. So then we take advantage of it. Does that make sense? So it's addressing the nature. But at the same time, it's because it is transcendental subject, it applies to everybody. Everybody can take advantage. Does that make sense? So you see Shankaracharya pointing out that Gita is the one book for everybody. Right? If everybody just read that, then they'd all understand spiritual life. You know, you don't technically need other books to understand the basis of spiritual life. Understanding that, then you go on to further study, then yes. Does that make sense? And so also Prabhupada pointing out the postgraduate, meaning that coming to the Vaishnava platform, that's actually the higher. We come up to we have the Dvija aspect, then you come to that, but beyond that, that's why the Vaishnava is the postgraduate. Because one goes from just a general into advanced knowledge of the Vedas, but then the actual further study of the Vedas is Vaishnava. So that's the real point that any soul can take advantage of. But it doesn't mean that according to their conditioning, there's not going to be some effect. But once one gets beyond that, then there is no effect. If one is liberated, yes, then the material difficulties of feminine nature do not get in the way. The Shudra nature doesn't get in the way. But it doesn't mean that the duties don't remain the same. Does that make sense? Right? We see the liberated souls, the ladies still have the babies, not the men. You know? That's just kind of the way it works. You know what I'm saying? Draupadi was, you know, a pure Vaishnava on the transcendental platform. Nothing mundane, but somehow or another she had all the kids. Not, you know, okay, but hey, I had enough kids. Now you guys have them. You know? It didn't work like that. So that's the whole thing. Yudhishthira's transcendental, he's still the king. You know, Sudama Vipra, is that he's the Brahmin. Right? Nanda Baba, he's transcendental, he's the Vaishya. Does that make sense? So that's how it works. You know, Danishta, that we've heard of Danishta. Yeah? Prominent in the past times. Right? She's the Shudra. You know, she's the one organizing, you know, so many things, you know, for the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Does that make sense? So on that, everybody still does their duties. Otherwise, how do you work it out? You know what I'm saying? Everyone's going to make the joke at lunch. How does that work out? No. Madhu Mangal makes the jokes at lunch. That works out. But everybody steals everybody's lunch. That doesn't work out. Everybody steals Madhu Mangal's lunch. Now that works. You understand? So there's a hierarchy. Like that. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if there's not, then, you know, if you can just go to anyone and everything, then why would they go to Madhu Mangal to ask him about? Because he's a Brahmin, Brahmin being higher. You know, right? They're elder gopis. Madhu Mangal's a kid. Right, but he's a Brahmin. He's been trained in the Shastra. Therefore, even though he's younger than them, he can advise them. Therefore, they ask what they should do. And of course, he advises in such a way that it, you know, creates some nice, you know, situations for Radha Krishna's pastimes. So if these things work there, how does the social thing work? We just want to get things done without considering the social, but that's part of the fun. Because for Krishna, is it getting something done? He needs a temple, right? He's standing out there in the cold and the rain. He needs a temple, right? So therefore, if we didn't build him a temple, it wouldn't happen. So we have to do whatever we have to do to build that temple so Krishna has the temple. Now, in the process, we've alienated basically everyone in the community, so no one wants to come to the temple. But hey, it doesn't matter because Krishna had to have this temple, and so I got it done. So all those different things to go and go through, that's part of the fun. Right? Krishna just desires all the demons are dead. He doesn't even have to do anything. But he comes and, you know, it takes so long for that to happen. Right? All the different things building up, all the different activities. That's the whole idea, is that the Vedic things stay in place. What is elevated is the consciousness. That's what it's for. You know. So therefore, the Vedas are the best methods, best tools to use for elevation of consciousness. Because you're going to have to do something. Like you say, chant Hare Krishna, okay? No, we only chant Hare Krishna. Go ahead, chant without your mouth, without your mind, without the body, without your beads, without your hands. You know what I'm saying? You don't exist. You know, you're just floating around there. You know, so how do you chant? So that's the whole point, is that these are that you're chanting using the material facilities. So it's not that they change. It's not that now I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I chant out my ears or something like that. You know? So when someone goes to, you know, this guy's sitting in the temple there, like that, and you know, in front of the deities, and someone else wants to come in and chant, and he's going to go sit down next to him. Someone is like, no, don't sit next to him. He chants out of his ears. It's really annoying, you know. Sit behind him. It doesn't bother you so much. Does that make sense? You know, so these things they remain the same. Does that make sense? So that's the thing; it doesn't change. Yes.
Because we come from different mixes of the mix. So really difficult to know what is my nature if you and working in office or going to preach or do gardens or is obviously.
No, but it's a matter of femininity is a generic element. You know what I'm saying? So that's used, that's how women get things done. Does that make sense? It's just like this. The guy comes into the office, he has his briefcase, he has all his resumes, this and that. He, you know, stands up, sits down, yes sir, no sir, you know, does all the things like this. Then, you know, going through 100 of those, then, you know, they'll pick somebody. Right? You know what I'm saying? If the woman's applying for that, she's just pleasant, nice, you know, seeing you can relate, you can get along, then that works. How much stuff do women get done just by using femininity? Huh? Yeah. Right. They don't do? So that's the thing, is that that's always there. It's just be aware of it. It's much more powerful. Right? The skill is less powerful than the attitude. So the attitude being used, then it all works. It doesn't mean that one can't be active in that. You know, you want to fix the, you know, the Sankirtan vans and all that, and all, you know, great. But it doesn't mean that you have to be, you know, rough and tough. You know, and behave badly. You know, the guys are rough and tough. Do the ladies like it? No, so why would anybody like it if the ladies are rough and tough? You know what I'm saying? So that's what we're saying, is that these things aren't well thought out. The men are behaving badly, so then the solution is the women will behave badly. And now it's all perfect. But if bad, then that means bad behavior is fine. So now what we're saying is only women can behave badly. So that means it's not equal. Because if it's equal, men and women can both behave badly. But, no, it's just like someone's telling me, is you have, what is it, at the, like at the universities and stuff on campus. Now you can have groups where it's only blacks come together so they can discuss their, you know, their blackness and their difficulty in being black and everything like that.
Safe space.
Huh?
Safe space.
Safe space. And no whites can come. But there's not an opportunity that all the whites can get together, and then, you know, they don't have a safe space. So all this is saying, oh, and being equal, but it's not equal. That's what we're saying. That's why we say, Prabhupada says, less intelligent. That's the whole point. That intelligent means is that it's just emotion. We feel like it. And then after a while, it'll take some time. But, you know, I'm not sure what's the cycle, but let's say after a few hundred years, then, you know, the whites will rise up and they'll be able to have their safe space. You know, all seven of them. You know? Like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that these things are just, people want to control and enjoy. So it's just, if they, whatever way they can do it, they'll do it. So therefore, if you use the tradition that goes along with it, so therefore women use the feminine nature. That's how they control. By being feminine, you control. Right? Because people don't mind being controlled by a, you know, feminine nature. That makes sense? Yeah, so that's the consideration. So if that's there, it works nicely. But when one uses an untrained feminine nature, no one likes it. You know, it's all in their face with the men, but the women don't like it either. You know, these rough, tough, in-your-face, you know, women, no women like them. They have their one or two friends, as long as the one who's most in your face, the other three girls are junior to her and respect that. But if they ever try to be the same, oh, it's war. So there's no question of it, but it's like this. The man controls the woman, right? But the point is he has to do that by being considerate of the woman. Now, when the woman comes into the position that she's in charge and she's the boss, and she says she doesn't have to be considerate of anyone else. So it's actually way worse. You know, like that. Because all the other women have to submit. She doesn't have to consider them at all. While the men, if he wants to deal properly, there'll be a pecking order of the women, but he has to deal nicely with all the women. But when the woman's in charge, she doesn't have to deal nicely with anybody because she's the center. Why? Because she's a woman. So she says, it's equal, I'm behaving as a man. Never. No woman, no matter how tough and that, she'll always behave as a woman. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, what's her name? Ms. Croft. You know, she's going into the room, she's going to dress, she drops her clothes off in front of the butler. You know, like that. Well, why is she doing that? Because she's a man, she's tough, she's rough. No. You ever heard of, you know, what do you call it? Worcester, you know, is going to do that with Jeeves? It's never going to happen. So in other words, no matter how tough the woman is, she's still going to do feminine stuff. Her boots are shiny. Right? The guy on the Harley, his boots may not be shiny. In fact, if they are shiny, what's wrong with this guy? You know? So that's the thing, is that it never changes. So if you use the, know what the feminine nature is, use it, it's actually more powerful. It's all, oh, but we're women, what can we do? It's actually, that's the power. Prabhupada gave the example. You have all the heads of the company all sitting there, but they're sitting in this long room. It has doors at each end, and they have couches on each side. And so they're all sitting there having their meeting. Then, but to get to some place, the cleaning lady has to get through. That's the only way to go through. She's trying to do her job. She comes in, she covers her head, she kind of, you know, slouches a little bit and then comes in. All the men stand up so that she can go through. Because if you just talk, it's not respectful. They all stand up. She's the cleaning lady. But the point is that she's a lady. So, no matter, but if it was the cleaning guy, you know, they would tell him later to walk around or crawl under the couches or something. You know? So that's the thing, is that the Vedas have already given how the women get everything done. So that's the whole point. Does that make sense? So it doesn't change. Our position doesn't change. You know, detail of what you're doing. Like I said, who cares if one fixes the, you know, one wants to get it. What's that little thing? You know, that little flat thing with the little funny wheels on it, and you slide underneath and fix the transmission. Whatever it is. The girl wants to do that, we don't care. But the point is still dealings, it still, you know, has the proper masculine, feminine nature. Like that. Does that make sense? So it doesn't matter. So, but with the second generation, why do they have to do this? They have better samskars. You know. So in other words, the situations that the first generation women may be in, then you know they're comfortable in that, great. But then to say no, the second generation women have to go through that, that's actually demoniac. It's atheistic. There's nothing good to say about it. Because they have the different samskaras. They're not like the first generation. Does that make sense? You know, the girls are out on Sankirtan, you know, they got the little roly massage moose thing. They go up to the guys and roll it up their back and then, you know, start talking and sell them the moose thing. Like that. First generation does that and they're cool with that, fine. But to tell the second generation they got to do that and that's Sankirtan, that's actually demoniac. So that's the whole kind of thing. One has to know what is for who. You can't just break everything because I feel like it. I don't understand it. I can't relate to it. I can't. I don't have the patience to manage by taking an extra week to get things done by considering people's feelings and positions. I just want to, like a bull in a china shop, get through. Hey, I got in the front door and went out the back. Why are you complaining about all the broken china in between? You know, So that's the point. So. Okay, we finished that. Now we're on Sutra 1-3. Okay. Sutra 1-3-35. Kshatriya tva vagatesh chotaratra chaitraratena lingat. Kshatriya tva, status of being a kshatriya. Avagatesh, from the understanding. Cha, also, uttaratra, in a later passage. Chaitraratena, with the chaitrata. Lingat, because of the sign. Janashruti was not a shudra because the description indicates that he was a kshatriya, and Abhipatari, a kshatriya, received the same instructions from a brahmana. Right? Because otherwise, why would he get disturbed over a bunch of horses? You know, this guy's got better horses than you. So, you know, if you're a shudra and a brahmin has better horses than you, why should you care? You're a kshatriya. Kshatriya, he has the best horses. How is it a brahmin has it? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. You know, the guy, he's, what do you call it? You know, driving his, whatever it is, his Prius or whatever it is, and then a known, you know, mousy professor at the university, you know, drives up next to him in some, like, muscle car and that, and, you know, with the light and, you know, got the shades on, and, you know, the music playing, and, you know, it's going to upset him. You know, or if he's in a limo and the teacher's in a Rolls Royce, you know, it's going to upset him. Sutra Prakashika. The previous sutra provided grammatical evidence to defeat the opponent's claim. In the present sutra, logic will be used to show that it is not possible for Janashruti to have been a sudra. Social, cultural, and scriptural reasons provided a direct evidence that Janashruti was in fact a kshatriya, Sri Govindabhasha. If Janashruti was not a shudra, who was he? One can infer that he was a kshatriya. Kshatriyat vagatesh chotaratra chaitara tena lingat. Janashruti was not a shudra because the description indicates that he was a kshatriya. And Abhi Pratari, a kshatriya, received the same instructions from a brahmin. It is understood that Janashruti was a kshatriya since he had immense wealth and ruled a population. Shraddha Deyo Bahudayi, he had faith and was charitable. Chandogya Upanishad 4.1.1. Also, he sent a chamberlain to find Ranka and gave Ranka cows, gold, chariots, and his daughter. This is not possible for anyone except a kshatriya. Because of having qualities of a kshatriya, it is understood from the beginning of the story that he was a kshatriya. At the conclusion of the story, this is also understood. So we see a important pattern being established here, that it's, you have to see the context overall, what is there, and what is actually the consistent qualities of someone. Mm-hmm. Not that the words could apply, the semantics could mean this. Mm-hmm. So, because he's a kshatriya in other places by the description that is there, therefore in this verse he's a kshatriya. And because the word shudra is used doesn't mean that it changes his status as kshatriya. So it must mean that he didn't become a shudra there, it was by mentality. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You know, just like before, when we say unlimited, then that applies to Brahman in all situations. If we're talking about the number of jivas, then yes, unlimited. But that doesn't mean the individual jiva is unlimited. For Bhavan is. So that context that you always have to keep all these other aspects together. Does that make sense? So, because this one is sometimes the more difficult one, then we just do that other one was used first. Means here it said, what was it? What was the term used? Social, cultural, you know, reason, scripture. Sometimes you get more argument over that. But since it's a argument of words, if you use grammar to open it, it's really hard to argue with the words, since the grammar is about words. You know, so you've done that. Then having done that, now you support it with how it would be applied. You know, therefore the social and all those. Yes.
What's interesting is that some of the mundane academics, they claim different authorship for the Upanishads versus the Smriti versus the Manusamhita. But we see that there's a lot of harmony here between all those scriptures in Vedanta by Vyasa himself,
yes,
which undermines their argument that the social order was a later concoction used to oppress. And
yes.
There's just so much. They work in such harmony.
Yes. No, that's the point you're trying to see is that harmony.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually the postgraduate study. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, someone can study a particular branch, see that branch on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can see that branch in context of all the scriptures and all the purpose of the scriptures to know the Lord, that's the postgraduate.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Narad Muni is considered a more advanced scholar, because he can see that.
Yeah.
It's not that there's others who are not known more in their areas.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, because Narad Muni can see the connection of all areas, that's the outstanding feature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much he knows in that area, that's not even discussed.
Mm-hmm.
But that he knows the essence and his connection with others and a connection with the Lord, transcendence, that's why then he's considered the superior scholar. So all scholars in the universe, except Brahma, when Narad comes, then he's mm-hmm. He's the superior,
mm-hmm.
like that. So that's it. Yeah. So yes, that's it.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Sama Veta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premanandi.